You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Good afternoon on a Selection Sunday, Michael Rogner. It's Selection Sunday, and for golf fans out there, which y'all, longtime listeners of this podcast would know that both of us are golf fans, Selection Sunday and PGA Championship Sunday, and lose an hour of sleep Sunday as we go back to the awful daylight savings time. So lots of stuff going on. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. We got... Florida State is obviously not involved with Selection Sunday. They're also got no players in the Players' Championship, so it's kind of a Florida State free day, but yeah, still exciting sports day.
My wife sent me an article. The Academy Awards are also today, and there are apparently five FSU alumni who have a very strong connection to, or producer or whatever, writer on a movie that is up for an award at the Academy Awards. I guess three of the animated films, and then also the, is it like Everything Everywhere All the Time movie? I haven't seen it, but
no.
Yeah, so there you go. If you want to see FSU alumni doing something, tune into the self-congratulatory award show being hosted later tonight with the Academy Awards. So are you watching the PGA? We're actually recording during the PGA. You have it on like another screen or something?
Yeah, I do, yeah. As we speak, Scottie Scheffler is kind of in control, but Tyrrell Hatton made a late run, and he's in the clubhouse two shots back, so we'll see.
I am really happy. He's not in the top five or 10 or anything, but I am really happy to see Ricky Fowler kind of like coming back and just making it back from, I don't know, an awful mental case of the yips or whatever, like a multi-year case of the yips. And Jason Day kind of coming back too.
Uh-huh.
I'm pleased. I'm hoping the Masters should be good. I think it'll be a good tournament.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about Florida State's final game. The season ended. The season mercifully came to an end on a foul with 0.02 seconds left. And I feel like that is a really appropriate way for Florida State to lose. An offensive rebound is a really appropriate way for Florida State to have its final or its season come to an end. What did you think of the Georgia Tech game, Michael?
Well, I kind of asked jokingly in the game thread if it was okay to root for Georgia Tech. Some people didn't take that too kindly, but that's sort of where I was at on the season is let's just get this thing over with so that we can get on to something interesting. Like, you know, does Ham keep his job? What sort of transfers do we get? The game itself, you know, it was It was, you know, pretty.
They played well at stretches.
Yeah, they did play well at stretches, which is nice to see. The last shot that we had, I thought was great. You know, wide open three for Darren Green. Mm-hmm. I did not. Mm-hmm. I was not thrilled that we did not try to go 2-for-1. Not that I was surprised at all. But we got the ball back with like a minute and didn't even, you know, attempt a 2-for-1.
Yeah.
Which.
Yeah. And it was tied out, at that point, right?
Yeah, it was 60-60. So yeah, turns out kind of a bad thing. So
yeah, between that and the game against Clemson where we fouled, I like that we fouled, but fouled way, way too early. Yep. Wasn't a good year for in game situations. And then you throw in all the two foul. Speaking of the game thread, I was joking with some folks. Okay, so we have the series of sprained ankles in the Georgia Tech game, which again, very appropriate for the season. It's just like, oh, why don't we just have a few more injuries? That because we hadn't seen enough of those. And I asked in the game thread, you know, if we had so many injuries that we were only down to 5 scholarship players, would Hamilton still sit one of them if he got 2 fouls? And I thought, I can't remember who asked it, but one of our longtime commenters asked, like, well, who is it? Yeah, like right. Chandler Jackson? Yeah, he probably sits him. He probably probably rolled 4. Chandler Jackson gets that second foul. So I thought that was some good stuff. We actually did have more than 5 scholarship players, so that was a plus. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking actually at our 2 foul participation. I haven't checked it out. We finished 307th in the country, which is way higher than usual, because usually we're right around 350.
Yeah.
Or how many ever teams there are, we're that team. Yeah. But we're all the way up to 307 this year because of the injuries.
So between the Clemson game and not going 2-for-1 here and the 2 foul participation, I don't know if I would say that we are really living into the metrics the same way that Mike Norvell does, for instance, with his 4th down math. Although if you've seen anything lately about that, I found it interesting that we go for 4th down. Last year, Florida State football went for it on 4th down, I think more than anyone else in the ACC or close to more, which is great. Hey, that's what the math says. Math would say play players with 2 fouls too. Ironically, we actually didn't convert. I think we were like last in the ACC at converting fourth down. So I don't know. Both sports maybe need to figure some stuff out there. But speaking of Chandler Jackson, who has not played with 2 fouls at all this year, I thought he continued to look nice. He continues to make strides, and you're thinking to yourself, we got yourself a real basketball player here. And Cam Corin, I mean, that's a pretty nice freshman combination from what I saw, let's call it, in the last 5 games of the season.
Yeah, Chandler, I remember when he first committed, and I said that if he stays here 4 years, he's like a jersey in the rafters kind of player. And first half of the season, it was like, okay, well, that was a really bad thing to say. But he did have a thumb injury. But I think we really saw how he could be valuable in the future as that big guard who can post up smaller guards. You know, they use him quite a bit in the post, you know, the similar same way that they use Terrence Mann. And and he ended up shooting, what, like 38% from 3?
Well, you know, that's actually what I was going to say. Yeah. I did not expect – I mean, Cam or Chandler had a very similar profile to Trent Forrest coming in as like a phenomenal high school scorer and leader. Yeah. I think both Trent and Chandler might have won, you know, Mr. Basketball in their state. Chandler was Tennessee. Trent like led their team to a state title their senior year, and they were prolific scorers, but not necessarily shooters.
Right.
And I, you know, you'd think like, well, like most Florida State players under Stan Jones, that'll come in time. I mean, he made 12 of 32, which, and again, he played only, I don't know, I'm trying to look at the number here. He only played 27% of our minutes. So 12 of 32 is not a bad number at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you go to Trent Forrest, it took him till his senior year to make his 12th three. He was 1 of 8 his freshman year, 3 of 14 his sophomore year, 7 of 30 his junior year. He finally made his 12th career three during his senior year when he kind of had a 16 for 57 sort of outburst. But I mean, so Chandler Jackson's already a much more effective three-point shooter than Trent Forrest. And if he can kind of grow the leadership and the playmaking that some, I mean, you're talking about a pretty nice piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's physically imposing in a different way than Trent was. You know, Trent was kind of long and super disruptive, and Chandler's just beefy and can, you know, bully people. So it's great to have that in your point guard. And then you also mentioned Cam Corin, and I think he's the sort of the quiet, you know, really encouraging thing to happen this season is he wasn't supposed to play very much at all. And he got forced into playing. And it turns out that by the end of the season, he was really good. And I think that, you know, if he's here next year, then him and Chandler could be a really fantastic sophomore duo. And if, you know, if we're throwing it out there, you know, the two of them with Baba, then you got three really good sophomores, and that's something you can build around.
Yeah. Yeah, Corin, our most efficient offensive player on the team by the metric offensive rating. He was the most efficient. He's also the best offensive rebounder. It actually might be Cameron Fletcher, but he only played 10 games, unfortunately, with injuries, and so it's hard to really measure that. But Cam Corin, of the people that played the bulk of the season, the best offensive rebounder. And, you know, surprise, you know, for a big man, he shot 79% from the free throw line. So he got there a good amount. Mm. So those are all for a freshman really nice things. I was talking with Max and a few people at the Chris over at 247. You know, he does not have the explosiveness, and he does not have the length. But if you look at the skill set that Bam Adebayo has for the Miami Heat, mm-hmm. if people who like the Heat, you know, Bam was an All-American at Kentucky. The skill set, the ability to pass out of the post, the ability to shoot a three, the ability to knock down free throws, the ability to get to kind of defend multiple positions. He is a less explosive. He's a non-lotto pick, Bam Adebayo. Like, yeah. And so that, you know, you could do worse than have, you know, that probably means he can't go pro right now, or maybe even next year, because he doesn't quite have the same kind of length and explosiveness that it's almost a prerequisite to defend in the NBA. So, yeah, maybe you have a couple guys who stay for 2-3 years, particularly if you can find some NIL money for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he is, I think, going to rely on, you know, shooting is his path to the NBA. And his shot looks good, but he's clearly not there. You know, same thing can be said for Baba. Like, his shot looks good, but he's clearly not consistent in any way. So those are their, you know, those things that they really need to work on. But then Corin is also that center that, you know, we've been complaining in recent years that Ham is recruiting guys who just don't fit the system. Mm-hmm. And Corin's the, you know, the center that we need if we are going to play, you know, if we're truly going to switch 1-5 and commit to that. You know, you need someone like Corin in the middle.
You do. And his shot's not there. I mean, he's a freshman that, like you said, wasn't even expected to necessarily play 40% of our minutes. He almost played 60% of the minutes. But I had a Golden State scout that I sat next to one time, picking his brain a bit. And he said the most predictive stat to see if a guy who's young, we're not talking about 28-year-olds. We're talking about 18, 19, 20-year-olds. The most predictive stat on can they develop a three-pointer is can they shoot free throws? Yeah. And Cam Corin, you know, and that was really last year, Matthew Cleveland. That was why last year Matthew Cleveland was an undraftable prospect, mm-hmm. because NBA teams are looking at, well, not only is he not making threes, he's not even shooting free throws. Cam Corin's 80%. So yeah. While he is only 29-30% from three right now, you know, that according to one NBA scout, or probably more than that, that at least is something that they would look at, and they would say, we think we can at least develop a shot like there. Mm-hmm. Now, again, he maybe doesn't have the athleticism, but I would say that Stan Jones is seeing the same thing, that this is a kid who can develop that shot, because look at his free throw stroke.
Yeah, and you mentioned he played 60% of the minutes, which is more than Snare, more than Scotty Barnes, more than Patrick Williams. you know, more than Jason Rich, more than Aaron Thomas, MJ Walker, Terrence Mann. Like he played a lot as a freshman, and there's only four in Ham's tenure that have played more as a freshman. So
more than Jason Rich surprises me, because that guy was not, he didn't come into a talented, loaded team, and he was a pretty good talent. That surprises me. Wow, that's a good stat. So what, Isaac probably played?
Played the exact same number of minutes.
Yeah.
XRM.
Bacon.
Bacon. And Bacon's buddy was?
Beasley.
Yeah.
And again, they came into a very a not good team.
Yeah.
Right? So XRM, Isaac, Bacon, and Beasley were the only ones that didn't play, that played more minutes.
Isaac played the same amount. Chris Singleton played more.
Oh, Chris Singleton. Well, yeah, he's maybe the most college-ready freshman we've brought in ever. Yeah, I mean, that dude was like the best defensive player as soon as he stepped foot on campus.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good. Well, so what we're saying here is that winning 9 games on the season is not good. But Chandler Jackson and Cam Corin came out of there like the last part of the season. I think that is at least some guys you can build off of. I know Jalen Worley takes a lot of heat on the socials and the media, the boards and stuff. I don't know. I thought that after Fletcher went down, personally, I thought Worley was our most disruptive defender. Mm-hmm. I think the stats back that up with his steal rate, with just if you track deflections and stuff. I mean, he just was our most – now, maybe that says something about our team, that Jalen Worley was our most disruptive defender. But I think there's a role for him on the team for sure. I would want him to be a part of that. And I think that Darren Green, my guess is you would see him shoot a lot like he did the first half of the year if he wasn't playing. Let me look here just to get it. 85% of our minutes for the season. So my guess is you would see the shooting numbers on Darren Green a lot higher if he played 65% of the minutes.
Right. And maybe he doesn't foul and with 2.2 seconds left against Georgia Tech if he's not tired, or make a total brain fart against Clemson and foul way too early on the.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when you're tired, you make bad decisions. Speaking of bad decisions and being tired, so after UCF, which is on November 11th, I think you and I both predicted that FSU would win at most 8 games. And they won 9. So good job.
It was that miraculous win against the regular season ACC co-champs, Miami, down there, coming back from the greatest deficit of all time in ACC. How do you like that, Hurricanes? You got us our 9th win. Oh, man. If they're healthy, which is an if right now, they have a team built for March. Maybe we'll talk about that in the second half.
Yeah.
So we lost. Great. We didn't even make it to the like real part of the ACC tournament. We lost in the play-in round. We wouldn't have won another game anyways, because we had Baba and Matthew Cleveland both injure their ankles. That was neat. That was a real good one. Duke, by far the most talented team in the ACC, finally was able to go and win an ACC tournament.
Good for them.
That's great to see the team with all the 5 stars actually, you know, I think were they 4th in the regular season, but hey, 5 stars are 5 stars. So good for them. And actually, again, maybe we're previewing a later segment, but I would definitely say that if you want to take a team out of the ACC a little deep in the tournament, they're playing very well right now. And then Michael, the question turned to, so would Hamilton, was that Hamilton's last game? And if you asked me when the Georgia Tech game ended, I would have said, you know, it might've been, at least 50% chance, very well could be. And what happened over the next few days was Jim Boeheim got refired or resigned fired. I don't know. Classic Jim Boeheim style. Josh Pastner got fired from Georgia Tech. We already knew that Mike Bray at Notre Dame was out, and there were a number of other coaches around the Southeast and sort of like at our level, maybe Wichita State, Wichita State is at our level, like got rid of their coach. And so there's been a lot of coaching, announcements made And Florida State wasn't one of them. What do you think now? If I asked you, do you think Ham coaches next year?
I do. I think that they would have already made the announcement were he not. And we've covered this ad nauseum in the past. I think that it's a financial decision for Florida State. I mean, granted, Ham is a Hall of Fame coach. I don't want to take anything away from him.
So is Jim Boeheim.
But at some point, this season, it became totally clear that Ham was not interested in winning games with his team. And I don't know that how long you can keep a coach around that has that kind of attitude. And he's also saying things like, you know, as long as I can walk from the locker room to the bench, then I'm going to stay here. And it's like, well, you know, it's not your decision on whether or not you get to stay here or not. You're making millions of dollars to win games. And we've had two disastrous seasons in a row. But with that said, Florida State is not in a financial position to be paying two head football coaches and two head basketball coaches, which they would have to do if they fired Ham. So I think it's a financial decision. If it weren't a financial decision, I think it's probably a 50-50 call for the athletic director. But I think because of the finances, it's from where I sit, a relatively easy call to bring him back for next year. And if he does get fired after this airs, I will be really, really surprised.
I think you might be onto something there. I mean, you're a smart guy, so I don't say that in a way of like, oh my God, I think you might be onto something.
Wow.
But paying the two football coaches is big, because isn't next year the last year that we're paying two football coaches? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And I, as someone who actually went from 2 to 6 season tickets in football this coming year, because of friends of mine that are like, hey, can I know you already have tickets, and can we use your account? Like, can we get tickets and stuff? My guess is that the athletic department is going to make a lot of money in the next 8 months. I think that you're going to see the city is too. You're going to see some jammed packed home games for the football stadium. You're going to see if they're success, if they come out and beat LSU again, or gosh, beat LSU and then Clemson early on, you're going to see more donations. You're going to see a real uptick in some success there. You then take a coach off the books, the Taggarts. And I do think that you might be onto something there, where all of a sudden your ability to pay a buyout to go and get a better name coach in March or April of 2024 is a lot higher than it is right now. Like, just a lot. I mean, just that's what it is. You go from maybe being able to pay a $2 to $3 million buyout to $6-8 million buyout, $10 million buyout, if you have the kind of football season that you're thinking about.
Yeah, and for people who don't pay attention, Ham makes $2.25 million, and the going rate to hire a mid-major coach is $3 million. So he's already well under, you know, what you would expect someone like of his stature to be making. And so when Florida State does make that commitment, they've got to be able to not only, you know, attract the right coach, but be able to pay them significantly more than they're paying Ham. I mean, we already saw what happened with Dennis Gates, you know, over at Missouri, where he signed a contract where he was making a little under $3 million a year, and then he got bumped up after one season at Missouri. So,
yeah, for any of y'all who were holding that hope that it would be Dennis Gates at FSU, his buyout is now $25 million. Yeah. So that you can stop. You can breathe on that one. Yeah.
His salary is $4 million. So.
Yeah. So let's put a guy who, by the way, I'm probably rooting for Missouri in the NCAA tournament. They may be my team that I adopt. They play like Florida State played for most of the 20-teens. A guy who I like, Dennis Gates, a lot as a coach, and also just he was always willing to answer my questions at games. He's never won an NCAA tournament game. I just want to put that out there. He has not, maybe Thursday or Friday, that changes. He has never won an NCAA tournament game. He is making almost double the amount Leonard Hamilton is making, because Leonard Hamilton has been willing to kind of be on a discount salary, knowing his age. It's not like a stepping stone for him. He's willing to put that into some other, you know, his assistants and stuff. And that's not going to happen. Unless you go out and get a guy like Jim Larrañaga, like when Miami did it, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, what are you going to do, Right.
Yeah. You hire the old guy who's going to retire, or you spend a shitload of money on a new young coach.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, next year, I mean, you would presume that next year, then you're not competing with Georgia Tech for a coaching hire that's our recruiting ground there. You're not competing with Notre Dame in conference for a coaching hire. You're not competing with Mississippi State. Is it Mississippi? No, Ole Miss. Ole Miss is hiring, I think, Chris Beard, probably. Yeah. You're not competing with Ole Miss for a job. You know, I feel like that's maybe just a better year. You're not competing with Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm.
All those teams right now, all those can outspend us.
Yeah. And Georgia and LSU will probably not move on next year. Say they have bad seasons again next year.
Yeah.
They're probably not going to move on those coaches after just two seasons. So those are
Florida won't move on.
Yeah, Florida won't move on. So there's some big name Southern schools that will not be hiring coaches.
Alabama's not going to be in the market.
Right. Right.
Nate Oates probably just earned himself a lifetime contract.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Auburn. But
yeah.
You know. So I mean, I think all that is to say, I think you might be onto something. And I think next year, for a variety of reasons, none the least of which is we've got Taylor Bowen coming in who wants to play for Coach Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And he might be our most disruptive defender when he sets foot on campus.
Yep.
I think if Alford called into this podcast and said, "What do you guys think?" I think I'd say, keep him another year. Yeah.
Did you give him our phone number? Is he?
Yeah, well, I sent him a Zoom link. I think he's going to, okay. I think he said he was watching the golf and he's going to be.
So stay tuned, people. We may be talking to the Florida State Athletic Director here any minute.
Yeah, yeah. That in the second segment, segment. Yeah, so I think that about covers maybe the first half. Let me ask you this. Is there any other coach, or is there a coach that if you were to be shocked and Hamilton decided he was going to retire, maybe. Is there someone out there that you'd be looking at, or maybe is that a let's pod about that when we get there?
Yeah, I mean, my first call if I'm the athletic director is to Kelvin Sampson, who's Kelvin Sampson's son and is the assistant or the whatever they call the associate head coach at Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a total no-brainer that he's going to. If he wants to, he's going to be coaching at a high major sometime in the next 2 years. And if you have the ability to get him, then you get him. Other than that,
Dusty May down at FAU.
Yeah. There's all those guys that are going to have good years that say the right things that are keep up on modern basketball and run modern offenses. But you just never know how any of those mid-major guys are going to fare once they get to a high major. And so I wonder, is it better to target an assistant at a big time program as opposed to someone who's proven themselves at a mid-major program? I don't, you know, there's probably not enough data out there to say one way or the other, but I'm leaning towards let's go for an assistant from a you know, really good program.
I think that's interesting. What about an assistant from the NBA?
Yeah.
What about Luke an assistant Lux? From the NBA who maybe played at Florida State?
Right. Yeah. He could also call in. He lives right down the road from me. So maybe he'll.
Actually, that might be a guy that we could get on the show. Now, he's been part of a great turnaround at Sacramento. Mm-hmm. So might have to wait until after the NBA playoffs to get him on the show. Last time I had a conversation with Luke was last year when he was in town for they were celebrating the 2012 championship team at a basketball game. But yeah, he has done a great job and got his buddy David Azdulkis a job out there too. So I would put him in the mix. Yeah, it'll be interesting. All right, let's go to break. And then when we come back from the break, we'll do the thing that you're supposed to do on Selection Sunday, which is talk about the NCAA tournament.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app? Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
Hmm, that's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay. The first segment, we kind of touched on Florida State and losing again for the year. And then, but some positive developments from some of the freshmen, from maybe the younger guys on the team, which is to say the team. And then thoughts on just Hamilton coaching change. And both Michael and I agreed that it seems like if it hasn't been made yet, the decision that maybe it's the decision is to stay, which is probably a good thing for another year. And so that leads us into the NCAA tournament. If you wanted a segue, I can tell you that every single member of the FSU coaching staff will likely find themselves at a regional or at the Final Four. This is a great way to find guys who might be transfers. This is a great way to talk to other coaches. And so I imagine that Florida State will have a high presence there. But before maybe we talk about that, what are your thoughts, Michael? Like maybe someone is listening to this podcast thinking, I just might get something that'll help me fill out my bracket of shame. What do you got? Who's your tight end? Without seeing any brackets, which will be released in a couple hours, who are the best three or four teams?
Well, if you look at teams that have done well in the tournament, have made the Final Four. So the last 80 Final Four teams, so that's the last 20 years, half of them have had a top 10 offense heading into the tournament. Mm-hmm. So it pays to be able to score. And if you look at those teams, there's some weird ones this year because there's some teams with really good offenses that cannot play defense, like Toledo and Iowa. And so maybe they're not a great pick. But if you look at Arizona, I hate to even say Gonzaga because everybody thinks they're going to lose. But Gonzaga, Purdue, UConn, I think.
I think UConn could be a team. I think you know, they're going to play the whole region will probably be up in Albany and then Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. Yeah, I would pick UConn. Probably UConn and Arizona would be my safe teams to pick without seeing a bracket. Arizona beat UCLA last night. It's a at like 2 o'clock in the morning in a total grinder of a game, and they've been they're kind of like Duke in that they have struggled maybe against teams that they shouldn't have, but it seems like they're playing good basketball at the right time. And they have stars who can carry a team.
You know, who else has a top 10 offense is Missouri.
Yes.
Dennis Gates. Now a lot of that is off of turnovers. Surprise, surprise. Dennis Gates is running a system that is turning teams over at a very high clip. And then they are turning those turnovers into points, but they also have Kobe Brown, who is a really, I mean, it would be like if Fiondu Cabangeli stayed for like his junior, senior season. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's fun to watch. And he's another one of those guys that he's not going to remind anybody of Cam Corin, but we could put him in the middle of a switching defense and he would be great. And then Demoy Hodge, who would have played at Florida State had Dennis Gates not left. He followed Dennis Gates to Cleveland State. Is just a sharpshooter and super fun to watch. And
boy, that three he hit at the end of the first half against caught it falling out of bounds right before the buzzer went off. That was just great body control. Yeah. Really good player.
And then they also have Nick Honor, who's 5'10", who would never ever play at Florida State. So it's interesting to see that Dennis Gates is not totally committed to length.
Yeah. I'll have a stat for you if folks are interested in these, kind of random stats that help you fill out your bracket. Every single national champion since 1993, every single one of them made at least their conference tournament semifinal. There isn't a national champ since 1993 that didn't make their conference tournament semifinal. So for this year, some of those same teams that we just talked about, Arizona, UConn, Purdue, Houston, Xavier, Mizzou is in that list. You've also got so Duke, Bama, Texas, Kansas, of course. They're in their conference tournament semis or finals every year. Indiana, Miami, Virginia, TCU. So there's some other teams there that maybe if you're thinking about a stat that'll help you do something. TCU is interesting because they've been extremely good when Mike Miles is healthy and not good at all when he is not. So that might be something to watch.
Yeah.
What about coming out of the ACC, Michael? So Duke just won the tournament. Miami's been pretty good this year. UVA has always got a weird defense to prep for on a short, if you're not familiar with it. Frankly, Florida State usually tears it apart. But if you're not familiar with it, it can be tricky. Mm-hmm. Anything from the ACC?
Yeah, you know, sticking with the statistical approach, you do not win tournaments, NCAA tournaments, without multiple first-round draft picks. And Duke would be the team from ACC that has multiple first round draft picks. At least I would assume that they do. I don't really follow the mock drafts, but
Filipowski is for sure a first rounder. I imagine Lively would be not a lotto pick, but just because of his rim protection, like you just can't find that kind of rim protection everywhere. So that's probably at least two. And then, you know,
Proctor or
Whitehead could sneak in there.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's interesting. Virginia's good, but they do not have the talent, I think, that it's going to
take. You got Gardner.
Yeah.
And that's...
But even if you look at their 2019 team, I mean, they had the fourth pick in the draft.
Yeah.
You know, the team that won the tourney.
Yeah, DeAndre Hunter.
Yeah.
And they also had Ty Jerome.
Yeah. Yeah, they had three draft picks on that team.
Didn't UVA just have an injury?
They did to the mustache dude.
Their rebounding presence.
Yeah, and he can shoot, and I think he's kind of key to their small ball offense. Ben Vanderplas, he's a transfer. He can stretch a defense. He came over from Ohio. He's tough. He's, you know, he's typical Virginia guy, and he's got offensive skills that Caden Shedrick does not have.
So maybe fade UVA if they're in a tricky second round or against one of those upstart teams. Speaking of upstart teams, I mentioned Dusty May earlier. I had no idea until we were prepping for this podcast that Florida Atlantic is the 25th best team in KenPom. I mean, they're 31-3. They whooped UF earlier this year. I mean, they would beat the shit out of Florida State. Let's just put that on the table. That we would, they're basically a huge center and a team of guards. We would have no chance containing their guards off the dribble. I really haven't watched. I did actually catch a little of that UF game. I haven't watched them play a whole lot though, but I don't know. Can FAU make a run? They're 31-3.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the bracket, obviously, you know, that's the thing, but teams that are used to winning are really hard to beat. You know, it's once you've won 31 games, like you're going into whatever arena they're going to be in with a shitload of confidence. And they are convinced that they can beat somebody, and they're likely going to get matched up against some crap
middling high major.
Yeah, some ACC team that finished in fifth place or something.
Right.
Are they not play, used to winning.
They play
games.
Pitt or something like that. You know?
Yeah. So I like those teams to win early and just not go very far.
Oh, well, and FAU can do another thing that helps you in March, which is shoot the absolute net off the rim.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a guy, too, if you're interested in watching the NCAA tournament for transfers, which I like to do. I don't know a whole lot of them yet, but, you know, by the second weekend, you can start to maybe pick some out. John L. Davis is a guy, though, that's been on the radar or on my radar, at least for a few months now. He's a big, strong kind of wing guard, wing-ish guy. I mean, I think he plays the 3-4 in their system, but it's really because they're a 4-out, 1-in. But, I mean, 40% from 3, 6-4, 200 pounds, really good rebounder. that sounds like someone who would be a fit in a Leonard Hamilton system.
Yeah, turn on the play-in games, which I hate, you know, the 16 versus 16 that they do in Dayton. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you're going to see somebody who would start for Florida State right now.
Yeah. Yeah, so that could be interesting. Yeah, so can I be a whiny bitch for a second?
Why not?
I hope Alabama loses really early.
Yeah.
I'll admit it. I am so butthurt and jealous. Their team reminds me a lot of our Devin Vassell, Patrick Williams, Trent Forrest, COVID, the team that didn't get it, that was going to be a two seed probably. Maybe a one if we won the ACC tournament, which I think we would have. And by the way, Alabama gets to play in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And then go to, I think it would be Houston's the Final Four, right? Which is not that far away. And then, you know, that's Florida State that year would have been in Orlando and then gone to Atlanta for the Final Four. They have shooters on the court. They have a superstar freshman like FSU was starting to see with Patrick Williams. They have multiple lotto picks. They have a gritty, good leader point guard in Javon Quinterly, which was our Trent Forrest. And I'm really just jealous that fan base gets to see their once in a generation team go and play. And we didn't. And I'm having a hard time reconciling that. So I really hope they lose they're not going to lose the first round. I hope they lose the second round. Is that bad?
No, I hope they lose.
And they killed somebody.
To the 16 seed. Yeah, they got
there. They killed somebody.
But he only played in six games. So, I mean, the guy's in jail for murder. Yeah, you know, Alabama's not going to appreciate it. They're the fan base. They're used to winning everything. And so, exactly. Of course, you know.
Do we really need them to have a great run to the championship game in basketball, too?
All right. Let's let Missouri be the SEC team we root for.
I tell you what, though, Brandon Miller.
So good.
He is so good.
It's unbelievable.
If he was not born in the same year that Victor Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson, I mean, Brandon Miller is probably better than any number one pick in the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, he is so good. Unfortunately, there's this guy that's like 7'4" that dribbles like Kyrie, and I don't know. He's not going to be the number one pick. That's almost a foregone conclusion. But tell you what, in college, man, it'll be the best player we've seen playing in the NCAA tournament. I don't know. I don't. I would need to look at maybe go back maybe since Jason Tatum. He's a really, really good basketball player.
Yeah, it's definitely the best player that I've seen this year.
I mean, I know Zach Edey's probably going to win player of the year because his numbers are just stupid.
Yeah. I'm trying to think back. I mean, it's like, there were years with like Luca Garza was the best player in the NCAA, and he's just Trey Young, maybe Josh Hart. Those were some really good college players, but he's better than all.
Dude,
of them.
He is really, really good. He is really good, man. Which is all the more frustrating.
So we hope you lose, Brandon.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe an inappropriate joke. Who cares? He's really, really good at setting his teammate up for shots.
Nobody's going to be listening by this point in the podcast anymore.
Yeah. It's going way uphill. All right. Well, so there, if you're trying to fill out your bracket, those are some teams that, I would probably have picked UCLA until they just had maybe their best defensive player get hurt for the season, which is now those are the kids you feel for. You've worked this entire time and now you're hurt. UCLA to me might've been it. And I don't think you can ever count out a Bill Self coached team.
Mm-hmm.
So Kansas, who is the defending champ. So know that going in, right? Like not often that you actually get back to backs, but it happens.
Yeah. I probably will pencil them in for the Final Four just because it's Kansas.
Kansas? Yeah. I think they're a great choice to go to the Final Four. And then maybe if you want to mix it up and try to pick someone else to actually win your bracket. Cause you can't just pick everything that everyone else has if you want to win. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I'm going to watch those 16 versus 16s for transfers. I'm going to hope that, I don't know. Do we want John L. Davis at FAU? You want him to have a good game to get some experience. You don't want them to go too far because then he thinks, why would I transfer? I can just stay here and make the Sweet 16.
Yeah. You don't want him to get hurt.
That's true.
I don't know that Florida State will be able to afford somebody that who's that good, but
that's true. He'll probably get offers from Texas and Kentucky. So yeah, valid point there. Well, maybe we'll have a good team again one day.
We've got football.
Yeah. We need football to do really well so that we can take some money and roll it over. We need to get out. We need to go to the Big Ten is what we need to do. And then we could afford some of these other things. Okay, Mike, it's been fun chatting with you. Maybe I don't think we'll talk Florida State much until something happens, until we get some transfers or something like that. Maybe, though, we can come back and do a quick one, before the Sweet 16 or something like that, if there's some interest there. But I think the next real thing for Florida State fans to look for is, so do we start seeing announcements first of players leaving? Because Hamilton has made it extremely clear that he is bringing in transfers, that he has said that I'm fixing it. I'll bring in transfers. Off the record, he's kind of, it seems like he already has guys in mind, but so the first thing you need is to hear some guys leaving, right? Because we don't have any open spots unless someone leaves.
Right. We do not have any open spots, but the basketball portal works more slowly than the football portal. The football is just like everything happens in like a week and it's like, holy shit, all these new players. Basketball, tends to play out over, a month or two. We're going to see announcements of people not being back, but when that actually happens, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens while we're talking right now or if it happens three weeks from now.
Well, as Leonard told me walking out of the parking lot after whatever our last home game was, keep your eyes open.
Yeah.
So I guess keep your eyes open. It's been good chatting with you. Good luck on your bracket, and let's watch the good end of the golf, too.
Sounds good.
Bye.